everybody. Welcome back. You know, the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. It's episode 400. Will, I can't believe episode 400 of this fucking podcast is going to be an Elite Eight recap, a Final Four preview. How we doing, sir?
Hey, man, I'm good. And yeah, 400 episodes. It feels like just yesterday I was just listening to you guys start it up. But yeah, it's crazy. And we've had some great games this weekend, some blowouts. But looking forward to this Final Four, which should be fun.
I think this Final Four, dude, honestly has some of the cooler storylines. I mean, obviously, we're going to start with the East Regional champion UConn Huskies, who are going for a repeat, and they are unequivocally better than last year. And I've never seen it before. A 30-0 extended run from the last couple of the first half into the second half, which began with a 25-0 extended run. Like, dude, this doesn't happen in Elite Eight games. It's not supposed to anyway. I'll say that.
This like barely happens when you play a 16 seed, let alone an Elite Eight game. It was just crazy. We were texting during this game, and I don't get me wrong, I turned this game off, because which I do with a lot of UConn games. I'm not a fan like you, but I'm like, this game's over. UConn's just a fucking wagon. But like when I got the ESPN notification, UConn's on a 30-0 run. The only word you can use to describe is holy shit. Like, Klingon was unbelievable. They had no answer for him. And I told you, I'm like, if you're Illinois, you can't get to the basket, get fouled. You know, you can't hit an open shot. Like, not even 1 point that you can't even get a free throw. That is craziest. I don't think this will ever happen again in, like, NCAA tournament history.
You said holy shit. I just kept saying insane. And I felt insane for constantly saying insane, because I ran out of words as – they continued to try to attack Klingon, which was just the definition of insane. I don't know what the hell they're doing. Castle's dunk, Caravan's dunk. I mean, honestly, they made Illinois look like not only did they not belong in the Elite Eight, they looked like a team that didn't belong in the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. And then, you know, we talked on the last podcast about, you know, if UConn can contain Shannon, this game's over. And that's exactly what they did. He shot 2 for 12 from the game. And he was just flustered the whole game by the UConn guards, all three of them, four of them, if you want to add, you know, another one. But it was just crazy. Just I'd never seen him have a bad game like that in like the last 2 months.
No, they put him in prison. I mean, it was an absolute hell cell for him. I mean, Shannon, like you said, he only went 2 for 12 shooting at 8 points, but he played 36 minutes, dude. This isn't a guy that only played 20 something minutes. So he wasn't really in foul trouble. He was just unable to get past Castle, unable to get past Newton. I took a couple other notes from this game. One stat that stands out to me, probably as much as that UConn over San Diego State, 20 offensive rebounds compared to 12 total. This game, they had more assists, 21, than Illinois had made baskets, 17.
That's unbelievable. That's just – it's you can't make stuff up like this. It's unbelievable. And also, you know, you said it to me too. We were talking about it. UConn shot horrendous from 3-point, and they still went on a 30-0 run. And you said there wasn't one 3-pointer.
No, I mean, I think the only three that happened was Caravan's that kind of hit every single inch of the rim and bounced in on a friendly roll. But this was a game very much like the Northwestern game where Donovan Klingon just absolutely took over. He had 22 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 blocks. And those 5 blocks are kind of – I don't think tell the whole story, Will, because I think he disrupted about 10 others.
Absolutely. And, like, I was thinking after we were talking, and, you know, maybe we should get some – promote some gear. Just get some UConn shirts and just go – flip the switch and just have the Huskies logo on it.
I love that. Well, that was ringing in my head as I was watching the game, thinking about our conversation yesterday morning where you're like, eventually the switch is coming. It's just a matter of when.
Just a matter of when. And as of right now, no team they have faced can turn that switch off.
It was 23-all. That's what I think people are going to forget about this game when you look at it. I mean, UConn ends up winning by 25, but this was a 23-23 game under 4 minute timeout in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a close game in half. And, you know, but I think everybody except for people in Champaign were like, this is going to be over shortly. And I don't think anybody expected what happened to happen. A 30-0 run. I don't think anybody would ever predict something like that. But in a blink of an eye, UConn was up 15 and you're like, okay, this game's over.
You mentioned yesterday and kind of alluded to it where how does UConn want to play? And they will force their opponent every single time to play the style of basketball that they want to play. They are not going to play yours. They can play any kind of basketball that they want. They've played four games in this tournament, Will. Two have been clinging, absolutely dominating the shit out of the opponent, and two have been pretty much non-existent in the paint while they've been raining threes. So any version of basketball that you want to play is fine. UConn's going to play their brand, which kind of encompasses everything. You take Klingon out, Samson Johnson has a couple alley-oop dunks. You take Castle or Newton out, Hassan Diarra brings in 10 points for you and plays menacing defense. Obviously, you've got Spencer and Caravan, but you also bring in Stewart, and in his minutes, he's going to lock you up. Like, it's a rotating door of just hell for an opponent. And I really don't know how demoralizing that could be when you see all of these other guys come in. You're like, what in the hell are we supposed to do?
Yeah, that was going to be my main point about it, is like, how demoralizing must it feel to be like a decent team in this country, which Illinois was for most of the year, top 10 team, top very good team. Like, UConn basically goes out there and says to you, how do you want to lose by 20 today? Do you want it on the glass down low, or you want us to rain threes all day? You tell us, because we'll do it. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, this was the 10th consecutive NCAA tournament game that UConn has won by more than 10 points. That's not supposed to happen in today's college basketball. There's too many good teams. And again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, where they're up five at the half, and it feels like they're down because you're so accustomed to seeing them up by 15, 16.
Absolutely. And I got a nice little trivia question for you, Sean.
Okay.
The last two tournaments, what was the last team that UConn was losing to at halftime?
Oh, that'd be Iona.
That would be Ricky P's Iona Gales, which is the craziest thing to think about. Iona was the only team. Yeah, that was the only team that was beating UConn at halftime. And what happened? They flipped the switch and won by 20.
And you know what's crazy? And again, like, I'm waxing poetic about this entire situation because I'm out of words, dude. Like, I'm tweeting up a storm last night. Hurley's a psychopath. His team embodies him. Every single player on this team has an insatiable desire to not only beat their opponent, but literally embarrass them. Hurley relishes that. But also, I will say this, dude, like, I'm thinking back to past really good teams. Have we seen a repeat team, or have we seen a team that is following up a national championship come back this much better? I mean, everybody's talking about 07 Florida. You maybe can educate me. Was Florida this much better their second year around? Was UNLV this much better their second year around?
I mean, I don't know much about the UNLV team, maybe a little before my time, but the Florida team was not miles better. And when I say miles better, it doesn't say anything about that UConn team last year. They were the best team in the country by far come the end of the tournament. And it was you just saw it. But this year's team is steps above what that team was last year. Florida was just a little bit better. They brought everybody back. They brought the same players back. The fact that UConn has done this with a very different team minus, what, two people is craziness. Like, it's not even close. This team would murder that 07 Florida team, in my opinion.
I think this team would murder last year's UConn team that had Sanogo, Andre Jackson, and Hawkins.
Absolutely. I mean, it just, is anybody going to come anywhere close to this UConn team? Is anybody going to turn off the switch when they need to, or is just UConn going to dominate their way to another national championship?
The last thing I'll say on this, and I'm not doing this disparagingly to Illinois. There's just nothing to say about Illinois because, I mean, you allowed a 30-0 run. You allowed a 25-0 run to start a second half. Like, I'm sorry. I don't have much else to really talk about for you. But for UConn, like, this is a team that when you're looking at Spencer, right, and you're looking at Caravan, like, these are guys that have gotten better every single month of playing under Dan Hurley. You're looking at Samson Johnson, who's gotten better every single month. You've gotten Donovan Klingon. You've gotten Tristan Newton. These are all guys who came back from last year's team, and they're so much better than what they were last year. I think the development under Hurley and this coaching staff deserve so much more credit than even I think they get. I think everybody's just under the impression that they're such a great team and they're a wagon, which is true. But when you look at the progression of each of these guys' careers, it's kind of sick.
Absolutely. And like, you know, you got to, I give a lot of credit to Hurley too. He's molding these guys. He's making them better every single game. And you know what, even here in his press conferences, they're up like 24 points and a bench player comes in to give, you know, somebody a breather because you're up 20. He makes a bad back cut and pulls him out right away being like, what are you doing? Like, he's acting like this game is 0-0. Like, that's how you got to coach these kids. And it's just crazy. But also my last thing on this, did you see the comment by, I think it was Cam Spencer? They're talking to him about, are you guys going to run it back this year? And he basically said, there's zero doubt in my mind, but there isn't a normal guy in this locker room. We're all psychopaths.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, if you're
polar bear and roommates and they have to have a strict order of who enters the room first.
I mean, it's just like, if you're a team that's going to play UConn and you see that and you're like, shit.
Because, too, is like they're explosive offensively, Will, but they also, like, I thought it was so funny during the broadcast. Like, you could hear Stan Van Gundy being, like, actually upset. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically went on this, like, 20-second tirade of, is anybody going to play them? Are they ever going to have a close game? Are they even going to have a game where the opponent is relatively competitive? He's, like, losing his mind because he's about to watch a second straight game that's over, you know, with 17 minutes left in the second half.
Absolutely.
It's just, you see some of that stuff and we're witnessing something that shouldn't be happening in today's game.
Absolutely. And that brings up a very crazy Final Four matchup, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, Alabama takes down Clemson 89-82. The run's over for Clemson. It was a tale of two halves, in my opinion, for Alabama. They struggled a lot in the first half. And it's crazy to think about it. They had more turnovers than Clemson. They got badly out-rebounded by Clemson. And they still won the game. They found a way to win the game. I think Clemson kind of ran out of gas there towards the end. Sears had a great day. They shot the ball well from three. They hit 16 threes in the game. That's obviously the way you win a basketball game. But just at the end of the day, Clemson didn't have enough. What's your takeaway from it?
Exactly that. They went 16 of 36 from three. And it's going to be really hard to overcome that if you're the opposing team, because you know that's got to be demoralizing, particularly when some of them were late in the shot clock too. I mean, you mentioned Sears; he had 23 points. He himself shot 50% from three last night. Alabama advances to their first Final Four in program history. Nate Oates, huge, huge kudos to him. I didn't think Clemson played all that bad. Their biggest issue was their free throw shooting, though.
Yeah, they were 50% from the free throw line. That obviously hurt them. You missed it. You know, you missed 8 free throws. You lost by 7. You know, I mean, it's Monday morning quarterback, obviously. But, you know, it's not a very often time that you see a team like Alabama who has big athletic bigs get dominated in the paint like that. But it was one of those games for Alabama that I think it was, we're going to hit threes today. It was one of those. They're like, in my opinion, the way Alabama is playing, it's like UConn B. We're going to beat you this way. We're going to beat you this way. And they're very athletic. They run up and down the court. They can drop 100. They can also play that 60 to 55 game. But they do it at a smaller level than a team like UConn does, which brings us into that segment, which we'll talk about later. That's going to be one hell of a game.
I'm excited for it. I think Alabama's a worthy foe. And this is, again, you know, not to belabor the entire point that we've been making this entire tournament, but this is an Alabama team. You kind of expected this version from them a lot more often this year than we got. But what they've done in the tournament is prove that they're not walkovers and they're not soft. And I think Clemson is a little – I thought Clemson beat them up a little bit physically, particularly inside, Will. But Alabama didn't back down. And I think that's the character of Nate Oates. I think that's the character of a more balanced roster. We talked about yesterday when you don't have an alpha like Brandon Miller where you're going to kind of – either win with him or lose with him. You can distribute it out a little bit more. Sears was great. And I think this character of this Alabama team has been tested and they've passed it.
And it's going to be one tough, tough, tough matchup for them. But if they're shooting threes like that, you know, they're going to hang with UConn, but they have to shoot the ball like that.
Right. And I think immediately you look at certain matchups that we'll talk about later, but I think the Grant Nelson and Donovan Klingon matchup, I think Sears versus Newton, Obviously, what UConn decides to do defensively with their guards is going to be fascinating. But listen, Alabama, they're not a fluke. They've gotten here with a lot of talent. And my biggest takeaway from this game, in addition to all the stats that we outlined, Will, Alabama just has better athletes than Clemson does. And that's not really a knock on Clemson. It's just a matter of fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Clemson will be back next year. Not, I wouldn't say, you know, Elite Eight bounds, but they're a very good program. But you know what? Maybe they'll get their revenge on the gridiron in the college football playoff.
I was waiting for it. One of us had to say it. Yeah. All right, moving on to today's action. Early on, Purdue knocks off Tennessee. Edie has 40-16 and played 39 minutes. I tweeted out his endurance and stamina is very underrated. And that really was my biggest takeaway from this game, Will, because, listen, Tennessee plays at a frenetic pace. They're an ultra-physical team. And for Edie to be able to keep that up and still be the source of offense late in the game when they need to make a couple of big shots or at least get to the free throw line again with the men to win, he was able to do that. And for anybody that just says, oh, he's tall and they're boring, I would put this game on tape and say, watch what he did for damn near the entire game.
Absolutely. And, you know, Tennessee had it going early. Dalton Connect was hitting three after three. He hit six threes. But the thing with Dalton Connect, yeah, he had 37 points, but it took him 31 shots to get him 37 points. And maybe that did cost Tennessee a little bit. But at the end of the day, what you said right on it, they had no answer for Edie. 40 points, played 39 minutes. Just feed the ball to him. He hits his free throws. He's more than just a guy that obviously he doesn't have that mid-range game a little bit. I think that will develop if he plays in the NBA or he plays overseas where he could hit that elbow jumper. Because why couldn't you hit an elbow jumper? But you're a very good free throw shooter. So I think that goes hand in hand. Tennessee gave them their all. They kept it close all game. They had an 11-point lead at one point. But when you get bodied on the boards like that, you get bodied in the paint. I mean, they hit a lot of threes, but when you're getting dominated on easy layups and, you know, free throws going the other way, they just had no answer at the end of the day.
Purdue was in the bonus, I think, with 11:30 left in the first half, and I think with like 10:50 left in the second.
Yeah, and absolutely. There was really hard. And I don't know if you remember. It was Edie scored like 8 points in a row. It was like midway through the second half, and he had the ball at the 3-point line with nobody around him. I'm like, please just shoot this. Please just shoot this. You're making everything today. I just wanted him to shoot it and have it go in. I'm like, yep, Purdue's going to win this game, but then it was a dribble handoff. But there was nobody within 10 feet of him because they're not scared of him anywhere outside of the paint. But that's something for Edie's game going forward. You can't just be 7-4. Look at Sean Bradley in the NBA. He was 7-6, and he wasn't even good because he couldn't do anything but make a layup. So he's got to develop a little bit of a mid-range game. And I think he could be a good NBA player.
You know, I think it's really hard watching guys that are so dominant on the collegiate level and try to look at them and the offense, in a particular way at the next level. I think of like the Michigan offense, right? What's the biggest debate right now in the NFL draft process is how good is JJ McCarthy? Well, we never really had to see him do much, but the identity of the Michigan offense was run the ball down your fucking throat with power running backs, with a dominant offensive line, win in the trenches, and how McCarthy convert a lot of like third and threes, third and fours, use his athleticism. How good is he really? We don't know because he was never really asked to do it.
Too much,
and I think
you're
kind of looking at the same thing. Like the only time Tennessee was really able to neutralize him at all was when they got him outside of the restricted area and he had to take a little bit deeper hook shots, a little bit deeper passes than he's used to making when he's comfortable. To your overall point, I think he absolutely has to expand his game. But for Purdue to win and for Purdue to be dominant and possibly win a national championship, that is not what they're looking for him to do. Jones hit a couple big threes. Lawson had a couple big shots. Gillis made a couple big plays. This is the version of Purdue that we've been seeing this entire tournament. Zach Edey's he's the driving factor in the whole thing, but the rest of the supporting cast has absolutely been along for the ride.
Absolutely. And they're going to be a tough out going forward in the next two games if they win the next one. However, and, you know, Zach Edey's going to get his 30 points. You know that's coming regardless of who you're playing. But you just got to find a way to, you know, have him miss some shots. You know, he gets a lot of teams in foul trouble, and that's how Purdue wins games. But you know what? It's going to be good matchups going forward for him, and we'll see how good he really is when it comes down to really crunch time.
Yeah, I don't have really that much critique on Tennessee. I thought they played an overall very good game. Like you said, Connect, if he was a little more efficient, maybe they had a chance. But the rest of the supporting cast, I mean, some of their guards, I mean, they just couldn't hit shots. There was a time there where I think Connect had 31 and the rest of the team had 32. It's going to be hard that way.
Yeah, they just needed another guy. You know, we talked about that, another SEC team, South Carolina with Michi Johnson. You know, for the whole year they had nobody else, and it obviously cost them. But you know, that was the thing with Tennessee. They didn't have another, like, you're not going to have two Dalton Connects on a team. But if you can get somebody that has somewhat is averaging close to 15 to 17 points a game with Dalton Connect, then Tennessee, you know, probably, I wouldn't say wins the game, but they have a better shot to win the game.
Sure. And the last comment I'll make on this game is, you know, I was kind of saying how Boston was stores north, and that was a glorified home game for UConn last night. Detroit felt like West Lafayette. That place was rocking.
Yep, there was a lot of black and gold in that arena last night.
It was just crazy. And I will kind of close with this. I give the referees an unbelievable amount of credit. Usually I'm not one to talk about the refs unless they suck. But this was a really physical game where there was a lot of contact in and around Edie. There was a lot of contact around Connect and some of the low post action that Tennessee was running. For a very physical game, there were very few turnovers, and I thought damn near every single foul that was called was correct. So I don't know if you agree with me, but that was a big takeaway overall from the game for me.
I definitely agree with you, because there were some fouls that they probably call for other players that are not named Zach Edey, but every time he got fouled, he got mugged. It wasn't like a tic-tac call. He got mugged. And there's a lot of fouls that are called against a guy that's maybe 6'10", 6'11", that would get that call when they miss an easy layup. But, you know, when Edie's so dominant down there, like, you literally have to get mugged for him to get the call, which is the right thing to do because of, you know, the skill level that he is. But the thing about Edie, he never really complains. He knows he's going to get hacked every time, regardless if the refs call it or not. Like, he just puts his head down and he runs the other way. And I kind of respect that out of him.
I respect the hell out of it. And I think that he's – you see the temperament of Painter, of Edie, trickling all the way down to the rest of the team. They are much more composed. They are a much more mature bunch than they were last year. And listen, I think I can speak for everybody that had a lot of questions about could they come back after having such a disappointment the last 2 years. And the character has been on point this entire tournament. You got to give them a lot of credit for that.
Yep. The last thing I'm going to say, Sean, is it going to be a trend? Is it going to be a trend? Like, hey, you're a number one seed. Like, hey, let's lose to a 16 seed because we're going to be going to the Final Four next year.
That's definitely been circulating out there. I hope my boys have something to say about that. Or shit, maybe NC State will have something to say about that, Will, because the final game of the day, NC State, they get Duke for a third time this year. DJ Burns goes absolutely nuclear. DJ Horn had a great game. All the DJ puns, I think Raftery and Eagle used every single one of them. I don't know if they have any left in the canister for for the Final Four. But holy shit, man. I can't believe we're here, but the Cinderella run continues.
Like, just shock the fucking world. Just shock the fucking world, NC State. You know, Jimmy V's looking up right now, and he's smiling. You know he is.
Looking up. I think he's looking down on him. He is a godly man.
That's my bad. My bad. Yeah. Looking down.
Right now.
100% looking down and smiling. But also, the greatest thing I take away from this game, because we hate this guy so much, Burns just fucking dominating Filipowski, just making him his little bitch, was the greatest thing. Filipowski complaining about every little thing. Burns could not be stopped. Like you said, DJ Horn had a great game. The most impressive thing for NC State about this game is they were up the whole game, basically. And their other big man, Diarra, was in foul trouble the whole game. He barely even played. And they're still going on runs. They're hitting these shots. It just continues for NC State. And, you know, for Duke, you know, minus McCain, you know, you had nobody else. You got hit 30. He had 32 points. He had 5 threes. You know, Filipowski non-existent with Burns down there. But, you know, listen, I mean, why not? Why not root for NC State against Purdue? Why not? And listen, I'll say it to you too. You say you beat Alabama and NC State gets another one and we're going nuts again about NC State. If I'm UConn, regardless how much of a wagon I am, I don't want to play a team with nothing to lose. I don't want to play an 11 seed that has beaten so many good teams. I just don't want to do it. I would be scared shitless if it was my Kansas Jayhawks playing NC State in this round. I'd be like, we might lose this game. They're just, you know, I'm saying everybody, like even me, I had them losing the first round of the tournament because I'm like, this team just played 5 games in 5 days and then they have to play on a Thursday? Like, they're going to be dead tired. But they just keep going with the momentum. It's all about momentum in the college basketball tournament. And it's just been a crazy run, and it's very fun to watch.
Is they kind of have that team of destiny feel to them. And I've compared them to the 2011 UConn team. I think you can easily come to the 2014 UConn team. You know, that VCU run as well in the Final Four. There's been a couple of them, but this doesn't happen very often. And I know we say all the time, they're not your traditional 11 seed.
Yeah.
Which is true, but they're still an 11 seed. They still needed to win the ACC tournament to get in. They still obviously have needed to beat opponents that had far better seasons than them this year. But they do seem to kind of have that little bit of fate on their side.
Mm-hmm. I look
forward to this game, as we said yesterday morning on our pod. These two teams know each other so well. These two teams can throw out all the strategies, all the playbooks, and it's just going to be a matter of who wants it a little bit more, dude. Who wants to play a little bit harder? Who has the urge to get to Phoenix a little bit more than their opponent? Because you're not going to fake out anybody. You're not going to surprise anybody. This is the fourth time that they played this year. And North Carolina State, after weathering an early storm from Duke, just proved to be the better team. And as they continue to win games and stack up victories, listen, Duke had a super impressive run in this tournament, although they played basically nobody. That's not necessarily their fault. That's how the bracket went. That's how the results went. That's how the matchups were. You can't penalize them for beating who they were supposed to beat and who they ended up matching up with. But this is a team that has been more physical than Duke this year. This is a team that in their one-on-one matchups has gotten the better of Duke this year. And I think as Duke started to realize that there was maybe a external factor that was away from the basketball court and a little bit more supernatural, NC State is destined to be in the Final Four. And, you know, that's how I felt about a lot of UConn teams, man.
Absolutely.
You're not really – You don't have a lot to hang your hat on aside from the fact that this just feels magical, and you're kind of witnessing that right now with the Wolfpack.
Absolutely. And the last thing I'll say about NC State, which is maybe one of the most impressive things for a team that's played what feels like 20 games in the last month, which what it feels like, they only play 7 guys. They've been playing 7 guys.
And to your point, Diarra was in foul trouble. They were essentially playing 6.
Yeah, exactly, which is crazy. And, you know, it just shows how much, like, they want this. And, you know, and you've seen it in the games of NC State this year, in this tournament, and I haven't watched much of them because the ACC has been down this year, so I didn't respect the ACC. But now it's time to respect the ACC because you have a team that wasn't even going to make the tournament in the Final Four now. But you've seen in the games in this tournament, like, from the first tip to the first media timeout, you say to yourself, NC State wants this more. And that's what they show every single game. So it's just crazy. Yeah. And, like, just keep shocking the world. Like, I'm not going to be shocked if they beat Purdue. Look at the run they're on.
No, you'd have to be crazy at this point to be shocked. I don't care what the lines are. I mean, when you and Tom do pick boss on Friday and preview, I would assume both of you will be picking these games. I would be shocked to hear either of you disparage NC State. I don't care what the line is, because NC State, again, there are certain determining factors when you're following trends that go well outside of all the different team stats, individual stats, records, all of that shit. This just feels like this is a team that's supposed to kind of be here right now. And again, 2011 UConn, 2014 UConn, 2011 VCU that ended up eventually losing. Shit, you could put last year's FAU team in there too, or Miami,
or even San Diego State.
Right, all these teams that aren't supposed to be there, they're doing it. And they listen. I don't think any of us can talk shit about the ACC for a while because they had three out of the final eight teams left. And obviously holding it down for that conference that maybe wasn't very deep, but obviously it was a lot better than we thought.
Absolutely. And I might do a little teaser for the people that listen to our Picks Boss podcast. I'm guessing the spread's going to be a little bit around 7.5, 8.5. Would you agree with that, Sean, for Purdue?
You know, I suck at this, but that sounds right.
Yeah, I'm taking NC State with the points. It's just a lock for me. It might not be a lock for, you know, the betting world, but that's going to be a lock for me because you can't tell me otherwise with what NC State has done in this last month, going back to the ACC tournament as well, that they don't have a chance to win. You can't even say that. So I'm not going to be surprised if they beat Purdue by four. You know, I would not be surprised. So I don't think even NC State loses by double digits. I really don't. I think they're going to be in it the whole game. And that's pretty much their, let's see, can Burns do the same thing he did against Filipowski against Edie? It's a little bit tougher competition when he's a lot bigger than Burns height-wise, not really midsection-wise. But we'll see how that goes. So that's going to be a fun game, and that brings us to your boys.
Yes, it does. Just to follow up on that point of previewing the NC State Purdue game, I think obviously the matchup everybody's going to be watching is Burns against Edie. I think also you want to see the depth of NC State. Can they weather the storm of an eventual Purdue run that you know will happen? Probably an 8-0 run, a 10-2 run. Will NC State be able to weather that storm and fight back? The other thing too, again, I'm kind of just feeling a little existential tonight, Will, is if NC State starts to make a couple shots that you kind of shake your head and be like, how the hell did that go in? How tight does Purdue get?
I think they get really tight because it's, you know, national championship or bust for Purdue. NC State, you can't tell me that midway through the ACC play that they were like, hey, you know what, guys, don't worry about it. We're going to the Final Four. Not one player on that team thought that they were going to do that. I would love to hear otherwise. But the only thing that could hurt NC State is the foul trouble on their big guys, Diarra, and obviously Burnsy. But, you know, if they can stay out of foul trouble and hang with Edie and not let him drop 40 on you, it might be a ball game.
We're going to find out, man. I think that game's fascinating. Yes, moving on to UConn, Alabama. You know what I'm going to say. I'm going to probably piss you off and piss a lot of listeners off. I think this game's going to be close. I think this game's going to be really good. I expect Alabama to be right there from an athletic standpoint with UConn. I expect Alabama's guards to fare much better than Illinois did. I also think that Grant Nelson can pose a little bit of a matchup issue with Donovan Clingan that obviously Danger was not able to do for Illinois last night. Do I expect UConn to win? Yes. I just don't know how many more of these crazy, absolute ball kicking runs UConn can go on, because it's like, this is the Final Four now. Alabama's really good. So I expect this to be close. I will pick UConn to win. I have no idea what the spread is, but I will say UConn probably wins by about 5 or 7.
So you're basically saying that Alabama has somewhat of an answer for the switch.
I think they have to, man. I don't know how many more of these teams cannot.
Yeah, so my thought on this game is Alabama has to run and gun. That's their only shot. And UConn can obviously play that game. They're one of the best teams, if not the best team in the country, at doing that. But I think the only way Alabama wins this game is they have to hit at least 13 threes. I think that's the only shot they have. If they're going to get into a slowdown, if UConn says, hey, listen, we're going to play a slowdown half-court offense game, I don't think Alabama has any chance of beating UConn. And I could see not another 30-0 run, because that's fucking unheard of, but I could see, you know, start of the second half, UConn going on like a 14-4 run. And then before you know it, UConn's up 12. And then everybody in the nation says, here we go again.
So Alabama is an interesting team because they are one of the worst defensive teams in the country, but they're also one of the best offensive teams in the country. Yeah.
That's and SEC basketball.
Right. And what I'm looking forward to seeing in this matchup is if their offense isn't clicking on all cylinders like it has so far in this tournament, because you know UConn is going to relentlessly try to out-rebound them. They're going to be up in their face defensively. that part of their game is never going to diminish, even if they're not making shots. But absolutely, if Alabama misses a couple of shots that they're used to seeing go down, how quickly does that switch flip?
Yep, exactly. So it's all about stopping the switch.
Because I don't think they can stop UConn. I think they could possibly outscore them if they go nuclear, but I don't see a world that exists where we're watching a 65-61 game.
I think this game's going to be in the 80s.
95-90.
Yeah, I think this game's going to be in the 80s for sure. Both teams, even in the 90s, 90-something, 80-something, I could definitely see that in this game. Not that UConn can't play defense, but we know that we've seen Alabama not play defense for most of the year. And they make stops when you had to, as we talk about that Kentucky team, which I don't even want to say the K word anymore. I don't even want to say that word. It hurts me. I think it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be a fun Final Four. And, if you don't live in around the Purdue area, I think everybody in the world's cheering for NC State.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And I'm selfishly very happy that the NC State-Purdue game is the first hit and UConn and Alabama gets the nightcap, because I think that's the game everybody's going to want to watch, but also will be very – they'll be content going to bed if UConn goes on one of their runs.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, as a fan like you, if you played first in some, say you lose that game, you're not going to be interested. You're going to be like, I'm pissed.
Oh, no, I wouldn't even watch it, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. It's both ways. But I think it's the smart play because, like you said, it could be one of those runs for UConn again. You'd be like, all right, UConn's back in the national championship.
Just something to keep in mind, and this is kind of where those external factors start to kind of creep in your head again. UConn is 10-1 all time in the Final Four. Jesus. Their only loss came in 2009 to Michigan State.
In 99-04,
2011, 2014, and 2023, they ran the table. So that's another thing where is if you're a program, are you just saying, hey, listen, this is this year's team. We got to just deal with this year's team. Or are you saying we go to the Final Four? We don't lose in the Final Four. And does UConn extra confidence? And does that give an opponent like a little extra sliver of doubt in their mind?
I think if you're this UConn team, and especially for opponents too, is you're not the 2014 team. You're not even last year's team. This is a different team. We're 0-0 in the Final Four. Obviously there's some guys. So you got to play it like you never won a Final Four game before, and that's what the opponents are going to be thinking too. This is UConn's. UConn hasn't been here before. If you're an opponent, that's how you have to look at it. You can't look at it like this team is. If you're the facing UConn, you can't be like, this team's such a wagon. Like, let's try our best, guys. No, you got to look at it like UConn's never been here before. Let's show them what it means to be here. That's what you have to have the mentality as an opponent.
And that's why I'm glad I'm not playing, because as a fan, I'm superstitious. And I'm like, I have all this reason to just be like, it's just two more games, guys. It's just two more games. Just keep going.
Absolutely.
We don't lose Final Fours, but also it's like, this is not really supposed to happen. And the last time they were a one seed was 2009 when they did lose to Michigan State team. So that's, you're just playing all these mind games. Is essentially,
yeah, it's all mind games. Yeah, away sure. From
the, which I know you'd be doing with Kansas.
I'm used to losing in the Final Four because I had to play all those Kentucky teams because we always lined up. They were always in our bracket. Those Kentucky teams with Anthony Davis and Carl Anthony Towns and De'Aaron Fox and John Wall. Yeah, I'm done talking about that. God damn it. I hate that team.
Before we get out of here, I do want to talk about the women's just for a tiny bit. We do have an advancement to the Final Four from today. NC State, they mirror the men's team by going back to the Final Four. South Carolina goes back as well. They're a fucking wagon. And then tomorrow, mm-hmm. We get two awesome matchups. Paige Beckers against Juju Watkins, UNC, or
UConn,
and Iowa LSU in a rematch that everybody's going to be wanting to see. I tweeted out last night, I cannot wait for this game. Rematch of last year's national championship. Do you have any thoughts on these games?
Just Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, there's some bad blood, from the media standpoint, but from what I've heard, those two really respect each other on and off the court. The media makes it seem like they hate each other, which I don't really think they do.
That game to create these crazy rivalries, and
yeah, absolutely. That's gonna be one hell of a game
for each other.
Yeah, that's gonna be one hell of a game, high scoring. I think Caitlin Clark goes for 40. you know, an Angel Reese goes 25 and like 17 or something like that, it's going to be a nuts game. And then the game with UConn and USC, it's crazy to think, like, UConn's a 3 seed. They were probably close to the 4 line this year. They struggled a lot in conference play, but it just shows how good Gino Auriemma is. Obviously, you have Paige Buchers or Buckers, whatever, how you pronounce her name, all American. But it's just Gino doing Gino things. And then, you know, you have NC State, both men and women. Hey, can they both shock the world? Can you beat the undefeated South Carolina Gamecocks? Can the NC State men beat the Purdue Boilermakers? That would be one hell of a storyline.
You know what would be crazy is if we got a men's and women's UConn North Carolina State matchups.
Oh, I mean, if you pick that in your bracket, regardless if you did a men's bracket, you did a women's bracket, and you just threw a dollar on it, how much money do you think you would have won?
Yeah, and I suck at this. What's your number?
I would say if you had NC State, UConn, both men's and women's, and you put $2 on it, I think you probably win up to 50 grand.
That's fucking sick.
Because South Carolina is the most dominant team in college basketball so far this year. They haven't lost. You know, NC State, granted, they're a 3 seed, but like, hey, 3 seed's a great seed to be. But, you know, to beat a team that's 30-0 or 32-0, whatever they are, I mean, they're going to be minus a big number money line. It's going to be like minus 900 to win the game. So you got to think, on the other hand, that means NC State's like plus like 810 to just win the game. So just to beat there and then play UConn in the finals, you know, UConn has to get through one USC and then has to beat either Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese. So that's, you know, no easy thing to do either. But just to have NC State and UConn in both men's and women's would be a crazy storyline.
It would. And you just think of the names, right? Like you think of the names that are left. And apologies to South Carolina, as I just know Don Staley is the coach. I can't think of any individual players off the top of my head, and people probably kill me for it. But they're obviously the number one overall seed for a reason. But you got Angel Reese, you got Caitlin Clark, you got Juju Watkins, you got Paige Beckers. It's really crazy how much star power is in the women's game right now. I know we kind of touched on it yesterday, but it's appointment TV. Like tomorrow night, I will be dialed into both of those matchups because I cannot wait to see who's going to the Final Four. I think the women's tournament and the women's game right now, even though we talk about the men's obviously predominantly because that's our area of expertise, the women's game right now and the women's tournament has just been a joy to watch. It's been a joy to follow. And I think if you're even the casual, I can't imagine the casual sports fan not tuning in through
these. Absolutely. Games. And to give a shout out to some listeners that might listen to college basketball and kind of shunning Sean here, South Carolina's best two players are Camila Cardoza. She's the big center there. And then their guard, Bree Hall, is very good as well. Those are the two stars that power that Gamecocks team. But yeah, just had to give a little shout out to the girls.
Right there, buddy. Thank you.
I got you back. But yeah, had to give a little shout out to the girls that play well for the Gamecocks as well.
Glad that you did. Obviously, I didn't know. I just know how good they are. But thank you for putting the spotlight on two of the best players on the best team in the country. So we'll see how everything goes. Will, this is going to be the first Thursday or Friday that we're not talking college hoops. We will reconvene either Saturday night after the Final Four or early Sunday morning.
Absolutely. I can't wait for it. And whatever happens. And I know both men's and women's national championship games are going to be electric.
Absolutely is. Everybody, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more content coming up this week between the trifecta of all of us. And we'll all be talking to you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right, everybody. Take care.